Live from New York, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null. I'm getting up
soon in the morning. Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. You can watch today's program by going to Ustream channel and searching for Gary Null. We're going to talk about how a poor diet and high blood pressure are now the number one risk for factors in the death of anyone. This is the University of Melbourne. And how broccoli extract is found to significantly improve autism. What's in broccoli? I'll talk about what's in broccoli that we knew helped us prevent cancer, or if we have cancer, now it's autism. Also from the Agriculture Research Service, wine grape powder reduces cholesterol in lab animals. Well, then we should assume it could help us as well. And how that high potassium is good, but high sodium is bad for your kidneys. And stress may be a link to Alzheimer's disease. Also, there are researchers showing that viruses can lead to cancer. And cats. Yeah, cats fed coconut oil and supplements lose weight while maintaining lean body mass. And a lot more on health and healing. Then we're going to have a guest in the second part of our program, a newsmaker guest from Hartford, Connecticut, Paul Blanche. Paul has been, for 45 years, one of the nuclear power industry's inside operational engineers. He's a nuclear operations engineer and a Navy submarine reactor operator. And so he's been a nuclear engineer and designer for several reactors, including Millstone and Connecticut Yankee plants. He's going to talk about how the Nuclear Regulatory Commission misrepresented the facts, lied about critical information that endangers the Indian Point nuclear power plant and virtually the lives of everyone living within 100 miles of New York City. That's about 22 million people, and I'll tell you why. They're putting a gas line within a couple hundred feet of nuclear power plant at Indian Point is a bad idea. Now, they've known it's a bad idea. They have the engineers and experts. Why would they do it? We'll explore that. Also, not all of our stations were on board yesterday. Some were doing special fundraisings. I did a one-hour special that is now posted on the biotech industries, the genetic engineering industries, the Clintons working together to create GMO-friendly world. And it's fully documented, fully referenced. It is a scholarly work, and it's a long paper. You can go to prn.fm or our website. It'll be posted later today on my Facebook. Well, this is a follow-up. I'm going to talk today from Food Democracy Now! The university scientists caught conspiring with biotech industry to manipulate public opinion on GMOs. Some new information on Monsanto, taking a page out of Big Tobacco's playbook to hatch a secret plan to enlist public university scientists to bury the potential harm of your genetically engineered corn, wheat, dairy, and other foods. In effect, whitewashing negative studies and systematically demonizing anyone in the media who tells you the truth. They want to mislead elected officials and the American public about the safety of GMOs and their accompanying toxic pesticides. We'll have the report on that. Hillary Clinton, for all of you good corporate Democrats, and there are a lot of you out there, including the Bernie Sanders factor. Yes, Bernie has some good points, and I support his points on Social Security and public education. There are at least 15 to 20 good things he's doing, but there's a lot that he's not in his position on militarism, on war, on supporting the Patriot Act, supporting the Libyan invasion, all these other things he's doing. He's as corporatized as you get. So, today, Hillary Clinton goes militaristic and hawkish at a think tank and gives militaristic hawkish speech. This is from Glenn Greenwald from The Intercept. This is the real Hillary Clinton. This is the one with all the masks removed, and you see who she really is. Now, that won't mean a single vote lost if you are an indoctrinated person who believes that that's who you want. That's fine. That's your freedom to choose that, but at least know what you're getting with it. Also today, people say, oh, China's finished, China's over, you know, the whole crisis in the world today on currencies because of China. Well, think again. I'll show you the other side of the picture, how China has a mind-boggling consumption of the world's raw materials. And when I tell you how much of each raw material they are using, it dwarfs the entire European Union and the United States combined. So I wonder how that's going to play out if China decides to stop ordering all those raw materials from countries or products made from those. You would see a worldwide economic collapse. So I'll give you the other side of that. Also, a new study out, brand new. You haven't heard about it yet. We'll share it with you today. Fukushima disaster was preventable. University of Southern California. Critical backup generators were built in low-lying areas at risk of tsunami damage, despite warnings from scientists. I'll give you that. And the melting permafrost, if we don't deal with it, and we're not, there's nothing being done. When I say nothing, I mean nothing in the United States. Yes, there's some people doing solar. My entire house is solar, and people are doing their own wells and good things. But they're not the ones who are causing the pollution. The people causing the pollution are not doing anything, even simple things they could do using biodegradable bags or paper. And as a result, here's the bill that's going to come. And this is from Common Dreams. Doing nothing to slow the fast-warming Arctic carries an enormous economic price tag. How much is it? $43 trillion. That's $43 trillion if we don't do anything. Let's begin. We have a lot to share today. And I don't know if we'll have time. If we do, I'm going to play a little piece from a network. Now, I'm really encouraged when I see a network tell the truth ever and on an important issue that could embarrass or challenge the administration or corporate America. This little piece I'm going to play from Ben Swan, I believe he's at CBS, talks the truth about the refugees, the very things that we've been saying all along, but I want you to hear from him. We know that a poor diet and high blood pressure are putting you at risk. High blood pressure puts you at risk of a stroke. And a lot of Americans are going to have a stroke this year. In fact, a lot of the physicians who have been dying and people have been claiming it's a conspiracy, they are all connected with autism, is simply not true. I went through all the people who have died. First of all, they're not all physicians. Two of them are chiropractors. And we also have to remember that the highest cause of death as a group of suicide are physicians, second by dentist. And one of these was a dentist. Also, when you know the health of someone, even a holistic doctor, if you're close enough to them, and I certainly have been in two cases, they did not live a holistic life, though they were very good holistic doctors. One was one of my longest friends in my lifetime, and yet never would do the things he had to do for at least the last 10 years. There was a period of time when he'd go out and walk and eat healthy, but then he stopped all that, didn't exercise, would sit all day long, and every food he ate came from a deli or a Chinese restaurant around the corner. When we would go out once a week to eat, he would eat healthy. But you can't base your health upon tokenism. It has to be something integrated throughout each day. And no juices at all. So when one dies of a heart attack, then another dies of a heart attack, then a third dies of a heart attack, you look carefully at their life over the past 5 years, you'll see, well, it was predictable. So I cannot find at this time any evidence whatsoever that connects them to being murdered. Yes, some were murdered, but people get murdered every day for a lot of different reasons. I think people commit suicide and people die. I just don't see the connection. But in some of these cases, it clearly was poor diet. Now, poor diet and high blood pressure will kill you. Here's the latest from University of Melbourne. This is a 25-year study, and here's what it says. Quote, a huge international study of global causes of death has revealed that since 1990, there has been a profound change in the risk factors of death. In 1990, child and maternal malnutrition, unsafe water, sanitation, and lack of hand washing were the leading risks of death. But these have now been replaced by dietary risks and high blood pressure. This is published in the current issue today of The Lancet. The study was conducted by an international consortium of researchers working on the Global Burden of Disease Project, led by the Institute of Health Metrics and Evaluation. And that was led by the University of Washington, the University of Melbourne. They looked at 79 risk factors for death. And here's what they found. The top risk factors, and this is not just here in America, it's worldwide. By the way, just so you know, there are almost 31 million people who die every year in the world. And that's rising every year. And more than infectious disease, it's nutrition. For example, I can remember spending a lot of time. I made more than 20 trips to Jamaica and Trinidad and Barbados and Brazil and Venezuela. I've been all over the place. And I always go, not for vacationing, though there are some beautiful places and wonderful people, but rather to study the health habits. Those living in the country, those living in the city, the urban areas, the ghetto of the urban area, the more exclusive areas of the urban area, the difference in their health and their life and circumstances. In other words, you have to have a context for every issue in life in order to fully understand it. You can't make a judgment unless you bring all these into that equation. For example, in Rio, you have some beaches like Ipanema Beach and Copacabana Beach, and they're small buildings that are right on the beach. And the people there go across the street, enjoy the beach, but they don't go three blocks back from where they live, because one block back, you're already at risk, because the criminal element comes down and preys upon these people. Now, for all the reasons I'm not going to discuss now, but are really self-evident, the inequality, the lack of jobs, the lack of good education, and the exploitation of the resources and those who can, you have this great divide. However, the health of the people living in those apartments is long. In fact, it's one of the longest in South America. It's up into the mid-70s. But the people who use the same beach, it's a public beach, their life is very short. Why? Because the water across the street from those multi-million dollar apartments, it has no sanitation. You'll see effluent, you'll see human feces just flowing right into there. Why don't they clean it up? Why don't they have central, water cleansing? Well, that's part of their dysfunctional politics and corruption and self-interest. I was speaking with a man who is one of the top physicians in Brazil at one of the leading hospitals. And he said, look, it works this way. If you live in a building and you've paid a lot of money for renting that or buying that apartment, your life is, you live in a certain area. You know where to go and where not to go. You know what foods to eat and what not, what restaurants to go to and what not. But you never go in the ocean. If you go in the ocean, you're going into water where you could get hepatitis. You could get very sick. I said, why don't you just clean up the water? You have one of the most beautiful and most popular tourist beaches in the world. He said, that's the politics. He said, people don't like to spend the money except on what's personally theirs. They're not into a form of socialism. Now, that may sound insane, but look at the consequences. Your children come down and they go in the water. They get sick, and it shortens their lifespan. The people who live on the water don't go in the water, but they look at it, they lay on the beach, and they don't get sick. So that's why I'm saying you have to understand the context of something. And so when I was down in Jamaica, I remember how lean and healthy so many people were, and talking with people about their diets and how much they grow themselves, and the abundance of fruits and vegetables and gourds and breadfruit and plantain, and the backyards that were just loaded with soursop, that is a common fruit there that is eaten every day, that prevents cancer. One of the most powerful healing plants on the planet is soursop. But that's true in every country. Now that's changing, where they have their own local herbs or foods or traditions. Now in comes the American diet, and more often than not, it comes through when a person's economy changes and they can afford foods that we eat and lifestyle that we have, they immediately embrace it. The Chinese have done this, the Brazilians have done it, and the Indians have done it. As a result, you now have over 3.6 billion people 2.6 billion people who are wanting the American lifestyle without looking at the fact that we're the most obese country in the world. We have the most diabetes of any country in the world. We have the most children with heart disease, cancers, arthritis, and diabetes in the world. And so you're now seeing obesity in India, where you never had that as any major problem before. I was speaking with Vandana Shiva, who is one of the leading health advocates and environmental activists in India. And she said, the moment people begin to make money, they buy the American foods. The fast food chains open and people flock to them, and they get diseased. So, quote, top risk factors, high body index, of a mass index, that means fat. Let me put it very simply. The more overweight you are, the more likely you are to die. It's that simple. Whether you die of a heart attack or stroke or diabetes, you're going to die faster if you're overweight. Not obese, not morbidly obese, just overweight. So this idea that, well, I'm older, I'm not exercising, I got the middle spread, I got the pot belly. Yeah, and you're killing yourself. You're knocking years off your life. In the South and Southeast Asia, it's air pollution. In India, it's unsafe water. And alcohol is the number two risk of death in Russia. Smoking is a major risk factor for dying in South Sahara, Africa, and United Kingdom. People smoke, and they use alcohol. Then you have the high sodium diets, the high fat diets in the United States. That leads to a shortened life. So just remember, you're on a high salt diet, which is your fast food diet. You only need a maximum about 800 milligrams of sodium a day. You can get that from a good quality diet. If you have celery and cucumber, you're getting good quality natural sodium. But when you're eating white salt in your fast foods, it's leading to stroke. So just be aware of that. Lose the weight. Give up the sodium. Excuse me. Live a longer life. Now, this is from the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Broccoli extract found to significantly improve autism symptoms. What's the ingredient? I've mentioned it many times in this program. It's called sulforaphane. Sol, S-U-L, foro, F-O-R-A, fane, P-H-A-N-E, sulforaphane. And it's a powerful anti-cancer nutrient, and that's why we recommend that you eat cruciferous vegetables. Eat cruciferous vegetables, drink the juice diluted, generally 20 to 1, meaning 20 parts water to 1 part cruciferous vegetables. But eat your broccoli, cauliflower, asparagus, kale, mustard, radishes. These are all extremely anti-cancer, very good for you. and or juice them or get them in powder form. Now, according to the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, in this study, it improves health outcomes in autistic men and boys. So, and they located the primary benefactor nutrient, it was sulforaphane. Well, sulforaphane is what's in broccoli sprouts. It's been shown to help dramatically improve social interactions and verbal communications in autism spectrum disorder diagnosed men and boys, and also to reduce hyperactivity, irritability, and other autism spectrum disorder symptoms, as well as hyperactivity. So anyone who has someone in your family who has ADD or ADHD, my suggestion is that each day get them cruciferous vegetables. Now, let's say they don't like to eat them. Fine. Then juice them and put whatever beverage they like. Let's say they like chocolate or they like vanilla or strawberry. Make a smoothie and then pour the juice of these vegetables into the smoothie. They won't taste the broccoli or cauliflower or Brussels sprouts or kale, but they'll get the benefit of it. Now, if they don't mind the taste, then great, have them eat it. So, helps with cancer and helps with autism and attention deficit disorder. Now, something else that helps is grapes. I was just upstate, and on Saturday and Sunday, I spent 2 days there to help launch a whole new movement. I was with Ralph Nader and Cindy Sheehan, a professor at Columbia University and one of the great philosophers in America, Professor Robert Thurman, and Gerald Salonte. And together we launched Occupy Peace. There'll be more on this on upcoming programs, but we'll be doing documentaries, articles, and movements at the state and federal level to help push back on laws that do not honor the Constitution and our freedoms, and to advocate on those in ways that we believe will educate the public and get the public involved in using the power of the purse to buy things that they should and not buy things they shouldn't. In other words, when you stop shopping in those big box stores, when you stop using their credit cards, when you stop engaging the neoliberal community, you're taking back power. In any case, it was a beginning. I want to thank we estimated 1,300 members of my audience alone were there. So for all of you who came up, I appreciate that you made that effort. And it was a wonderful and inspiring day. The actual filming, which was done professionally, will be put up on the internet very shortly. So you can see it wherever you are in the world. And our program is heard worldwide. So you can see the beginning of this movement. In any case, Kingston is a really cool town. It's not a prosperous town. There's a whole lot of drug interdiction centers around there. But you have the largest number of colonial homes in America there in that one town. And so you walk down a street and there is a whole row of these homes built in the 1700s. Really cool. And lots of them, hundreds of them. In fact, a lot of people from New York area who cannot afford to live in Brooklyn or Queens or Manhattan are moving up there, and very inexpensive. You could buy. I was looking. I just wanted to see what one of these homes go for. One of these colonial homes was for like $250,000. I'm talking about a historic home built in the 1700s. You can't buy a car rental space in a building for that. So a lot of people who don't have a lot of money live elsewhere, live up there, and the weather's beautiful, and you're right close to Woodstock and New Paltz and a lot of other places. Anyhow, they had a farmer's market, nice little farmer's market, and I bought some grapes. And I had a discussion with someone there about grapes and why grapes are one of them nature's most perfect foods. Now, there's several ways of having the grape. You can eat the grape fresh, which you can, organic preferably, but if you can't get it organic, you can spray it with a veggie wash or make your own with hydrogen peroxide and agitate it in water and rinse it 3 times. That'll get rid of all the pesticides on it. And or you can drink the organic grape juice, like Concord grape juice is phenomenal for you. Or you can get grape concentrate, which is where they've taken the water out of the juice, so you get, it's real thick, but it's really more powerful and most powerful of all of the powders, because what is powder? Powder was a juice. 97% of water or a glass of juice is water. You eliminate the water, you get what was really powerful. But no matter how you get it into your body, get it in each day. This is the latest from the Agriculture Research Services. And it says that a group of chemists and scientists teamed together and took a look at these grapes and found that they were able, from just the grape, they dehydrated them and used just the powders, and were able to substantially lower cholesterol. That was good. This was published in the Journal of Agriculture and Food Chemistry. So that's good information, and that's important. And if you have kidney disease, from Tulane University, published in the Journal of the American Society of Nephrology, high dietary sodium and potassium may worsen chronic kidney disease. Get off that high sodium diet. Get onto a low sodium diet. And that's a living food, plant-based diet. And stress, from University of Florida, stress can increase your risk of Alzheimer's disease. And a lot of people are stressed today. And this was published in the EMBO Journal. So de-stress and help yourself live a longer life. I'm Gary Nall. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. To welcome you from all over the world, I'm Gary Nall. This evening at 7 p.m. on the Progressive Commentary Hour, which is the most listened hour of the week of all the broadcasting I do, it's always a hard-hitting show, a serious show, with scholars on a particular theme. Well, I'm not going to have the experts tonight. Instead, I'm going to do a one-hour special on Pacifica, its problems, its crisis, and hopefully its solutions. I will be reading some statements from people who are a part of Pacifica. So there will be representation from people from the National Board, former executive directors of the Pacifica Foundation. Now, because this is not an issue important to all the other radio stations carry this program, I didn't feel it would be fair to their listeners to do this during a normal noon program, so that's why it's tonight at 7 o'clock. PRN.FM or ProgressiveRadioNetwork.com, so you can listen in then. This is the latest from Common Dreams, from John Quealy. It says, melting permafrost, and by the way, the permafrost is what you have in the frozen tundras of Russia, Siberia, northern Canada, across the Arctic Circle, Greenland, that's now melting. Now, it hasn't melted in thousands of years, but it is now. There's whole patches now where new vegetation is coming up, but something else is coming up, methane. And methane is 2200% more potent in causing global warming than carbon dioxide. Therefore, it's a major contributing factor to the warming of the planet. That's why I've suggested that we go meatless, because of the methane that animals, over 60 billion animals per year, are raised for human consumption. You eliminate that as a major cause. Well, this permafrost is giving way to methane, and what will that cost us? $43 trillion, and we're doing nothing about it, and that's unfortunate. And this is a report I thought was interesting. It's peer-reviewed Philosophical Transactions of the Royal Society. And here's what it says from the University of Southern California. Quote, "The worst nuclear disaster since the 1986 Chernobyl meltdown never should have happened, according to a new study. The researchers from different universities working together distilled thousands of pages of government and industry reports, and focusing on the run-up to the disaster, they found that, quote, arrogance and ignorance, design flaws, regulatory failures, and improper hazard analysis doomed the coastal nuclear power plant even before the tsunami hit. Quote, while most studies have focused on the response to the accident, we found that there were design problems that led to the disaster should have been dealt with long before the earthquake hit. Earlier government and industry studies focused on the mechanical failures and buried the lead. The pre-event tsunami hazard study, if done properly, would have identified the diesel generators as the linchpin of a future disaster. The authors described the disasters, quote, as a cascade of industrial, regulatory, and engineering failures. So, now, why is that important? Because my guest is on hold, and we're going to lead him with that. My guest is Paul Blanch, B-L-A-N-C-H. He is in West Hartford, Connecticut. For 45 years, he has been a nuclear power industry engineer. He was a Navy submarine reactor operator, and he worked on several reactors, including Millstone and Connecticut Yankee plants. In addition, he had been employed or hired as a consultant for the Maine Yankee, Indian Point, via this company, the owning company, Entergy, and the Electric Power Research Institute, the Nuclear Entergy Institute, and various state agencies. Paul has also been an expert witness on behalf of states' initiatives to prevent relicensing of the old or aging reactors, including Indian Point, Yankee, Vermont, Seabrook, and in support of plaintiffs filing suit against energy corporations. And he's with us now. Nice to have you with us today, Paul.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Paul, I read that because I wanted people to know that had it been done properly, we would not have had a catastrophe that we had at Fukushima. And that disaster is such that we're now reading in Pennsylvania, in New York State, some radiation levels that have spiked that could only be from Fukushima. Also, I've spoken with scientists and a physician on the East Coast, West Coast, who say that there's been a spike in baby deaths due to Fukushima. Also, we've seen die-offs as well as lesions and animals losing their hair and bleeding out throughout the Pacific, and even dead zones. Fishermen are now saying that there's gigantic areas larger than New York State in the Pacific that nothing lives because of radiation, which is going at 100,000 gallons per day, every day, every 24 hours, into the Pacific. And that doesn't just dissipate. So I appreciate you coming on the program, and our listenership in the past has been very active in opposing the relicensing of the Indian Point nuclear power facility. Now we're learning that a natural gas fracking and pipeline company, Spectra, has a green light to build an extended pipeline that will nudge right up alongside the Indian Point nuclear plant by a mere 105 feet. 105 feet. You could take a baseball, stand where this pipe is going, and hit Indian Point power plant. And this has been approved by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. Now, you discovered through your Freedom of Information Act documents, which I have and I've reviewed here, the risk assessments that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission relied upon to approve the construction were based on faulty documents, misinformation, and unreliable methodology and tools for generating their assessment. Exactly what I just read was the problem with Fukushima. But I think we should begin first with explaining why these kinds of pipelines moving huge volumes of fracking gas around the United States pose serious risk. And of course, we have natural gas pipelines everywhere, which brings gas to our stoves and home heating units. However, these new high-pressurized pipelines are very different creatures and have a terrible track record of safety. So please begin by explaining what these pipelines are, such as the Algonquin pipeline that will run alongside Indian Point, and then based upon past catastrophic events, what are the consequences and the potential level of damage and injury when one of these pipelines blows? And finally, how vulnerable are these fracked gas pipelines to ruptures and dysfunction and technical errors or even an earthquake? And that's exactly where it's placed, right on an earthquake fault line. The forum is yours.
Thank you very much, Gary. And I'm not qualified to comment on the epidemiology effects of Fukushima, and I just don't want to go there. What I can say is that with respect to Fukushima and Chernobyl and also the Three Mile Island, that all of these events would and could have been prevented had people been listened to and had they done proper engineering and safety evaluations. Now, getting to Indian Point, I just want to make it clear that the new pipeline, while it runs within 105 feet of systems and structures and components that support the Indian Point plant, it does not run within 105 feet of the reactor itself. However, should the new pipeline, which runs within 105 to 115 feet of vital structures, or the existing pipeline, which runs within 400 feet of just about every structure with Indian Point, if an accident occurs, and we see almost weekly where transmission lines rupture, it potentially could cause a fireball blast radius that would damage and possibly totally disable all structures necessary to cool the plant because of a single event, whether it be the existing gas line, which runs, as I say, 300 feet from the pipeline, from the reactor, or the new pipeline, which even increases the risk. Now, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, and just last week I met with the chairman and two other commissioners in the Office of Investigation and Inspector General. This is a real danger that is being totally ignored. And we've all seen over the last 4.5 years the consequences of the Fukushima triple meltdown of the reactor. Should one of these gas lines explode, there's a very, very high probability that exactly the same thing, even though there are different types of reactors, could occur. My calculations, which are not inconsistent with the equations used by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, project a blast or a fireball radius that would totally encompass Indian Point, thereby destroying all systems, all electrical systems at least, necessary to prevent a meltdown of the plant. And it wasn't the tsunami itself or the earthquake that destroyed Fukushima. It was the loss of electrical power to the systems necessary to cool the reactor in such an event. Exactly the same thing that could occur at Indian Point. The big difference being Fukushima was essentially located in a very low population zone and on the east coast of Japan. Therefore, most of the radiation went out to the Pacific Ocean. Should this event occur at, or a similar event occur at Indian Point, it's not on the coast. The predominant winds would blow it toward New York City and potentially could cause New York City and the surrounding area, depending on the wind direction, to become uninhabitable similar to Fukushima. Essentially, numbers, large numbers, a lot of people can't comprehend very well, but we're talking, some studies say, potential damage of $8 trillion, if you compare that to the gross domestic product of the United States, that's about 10%. It would destroy this country economically if we had such event. The only thing that we, when I say we, I'm talking many of the politicians, including Senator Schumer and Gillibrand, and congressional reps, the governor, assembly persons within the New York state of New York, and as I emphasize to the chairman and the commissioners, what we need is an independent and transparent risk assessment. What would happen? What would be the consequences to the New York area and the surrounding area should we have a gas line rupture, be it on in the existing pipelines or the new pipelines? The NRC, well, first of all, Entergy, the operator of the Indian Point plants, claim they did a risk assessment. I have seen that risk assessment, and I have told the Inspector General, Office of Investigations, and the Commission that this risk assessment contained material false statements, and I cited specifically the material false statements that were made. There were assumptions, for instance, in the risk assessment done by Entergy and confirmed by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. They said that these lines could be isolated, these large 42-inch diameter lines, isolated in 3 minutes. The same company in May had a rupture of a line similar in size, and it took 24 hours to even discover that it had ruptured. We saw the San Bruno event that caused billions of dollars worth of damage. It took 90 minutes. It is physically and scientifically impossible, and this has been agreed by many experts, that it is impossible to isolate a line within the 3 minutes, which is the material false and I believe criminal statement being made both by the NRC and by Entergy and Spectra. I say it's impossible to isolate it. Even if it could be recognized and the valve shut in 3 minutes, we still have 5 miles, probably a lot more than 5 miles, of interconnecting pipelines, which would take hours for this pressurized gas. So the bottom line is nuclear power plants and high-pressure natural gas lines are totally incompatible. We wouldn't have a fireworks factory or a dynamite factory located in the vicinity of a nuclear power plant, especially one that's in a very, very high population area such as New York City.
Paul, I want to ask you a theoretical question, realizing you're only going to give us a guesstimate, but it's one that we need to know, because we don't have a theory about Fukushima, we have a reality. And anybody who had a theory prior to it was not given any credence, and as a result, to save money and not to worry about inspections or changing anything, as this report I just led at the beginning from the University of California showed, it was incompetence. It was having systems that people knew wouldn't work. So let's say that this pipeline is laid. Let's say it, for whatever reason, there's a major breach and there is a fire. Give us the worst-case scenario if things did not go right, because in all planning in life, we must plan for the worst-case scenario to have a context of what happens if our optimism doesn't work. How dangerous would it be for people living within the New York City area, which is 20 million people within 50 miles, over a period, let's say, if this were to blow, if Indian Point were to blow and you had no place to go, and most people do not, and you have no exit plan, which we do not have, then what is the likely outcome to the 20 million people living here?
Well, the outcome to the people who could not evacuate, and very few people could evacuate, could be a severe overexposure. How many actual early fatalities is very, very much in debate right now. There may be, you know, thousands of latent fatalities. There may be some very early fatalities. Fukushima, there were very, very few early fatalities. But the critical thing here is the area, the water supplies, the infrastructure, the highways, the property, people's mortgages, uninsured for nuclear events, would be devastated. My son happens to live within the radius, and he's got a fairly expensive house. If we had this event, his mortgage continues. It would absolutely be destroyed. Just imagine no one being allowed to enter within 20 miles of New York City and what it would do to the world economy and especially the United States economy.
Well,
I can't project the number of deaths.
Paul, I'm looking at something more fundamental. If you wake up every day and you have 24 hours you're going to spend within this hot zone, sooner or later you will have enough radiation exposure that sooner or later you will die from that radiation exposure. It depends upon your immediate health, because there's no cure for radiation poisoning, and especially acute radiation poisoning. So I'm concerned that we would be so cavalier or so indifferent or so corrupt or so filled with hubris that we would allow our politicians, who I don't trust at all, to be the ultimate deciding factor, because they're so influenced by the lobbyists who will then bring forward their tobacco industry type scientists who say this is not a problem. And so then the citizen assumes that the choices being made on their behalf are all okay choices. And I'm saying, no, don't allow these industry scientists forward. And that brings up my last question for you, and that is, there's a huge and very dangerous conflict between what independent and proven science says versus what the corporate manufactured science claims. And unfortunately, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has a long sordid history of being influenced by pro-nuclear industry individuals who end up in positions of power. And the nuclear industrial complex is the guiding force here rather than the science that supports protecting the public. And when you had a chance to review the concealed documents that you told us about a few moments ago that were flawed and out and out had lies in them, that should have been a big red flag. And Entergy, which, by the way, has very close ties to the Clintons, especially Hillary Clinton now, and the pipeline company Spectra, are stating, well, it's safe. Well, then what does the independent research and past history show that refutes it?
Well, there's a lot of questions there. The industry is definitely controlled. I mean, the nuclear regulatory is essentially a subsidiary of the nuclear industry, the way we look at it. Anything the industry wants from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, they get. Your other question related to exposure, it's potentially that there could be, and again, there are so many variables, which way the wind's blowing, how quick it gets there. There could be hundreds, thousands, tens of thousands of, you know, early fatalities. We just don't know, and it's because of the variability. These people are not incompetent. They're corrupt. They're very competent people working within the industry. However, dollars is what everyone is worried about, how they can keep their jobs. They are intimidated. I know a lot of Nuclear Regulatory Commission personnel, high-level personnel, totally intimidated to do whatever their management says. And I think we have a good chairman. I'm going to be working with him. I'm in contact with the previous chairman, Greg Gasco. And I am not giving up on this. And if necessary, I'll go down to D.C. like I did last week and plead with him for this independent. When I say independent, I mean people that have actual forensic experience in gas line explosion. The NRC has no expertise in gas lines. They wouldn't know a gas line if they saw a gas line. Yet they, by as directed by Congress, have given the ultimate responsibility for nuclear safety, which in this case, they know nothing about it.
Paul, for more information and to sign a petition opposing the pipeline and to reach your legislator, go to Stop the Algonquin Pipeline Expansion website at SAPE2016.org. SAPE2016.org. Paul Blanche, thank you very much for being out there and bringing us up to date on this developing story, and we will certainly do a call to action and we'll start protesting.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
And now, for the final segment of our program, I thought I would share some of Dave Murphy from Food Democracy Now's story, because it segues to a major investigative original report I did yesterday for many of the stations, which if you didn't hear it, you can go to the website and read it, download it. It's fully referenced and cited. And this report that I will also post today is called University Scientists Caught Conspiring with Biotech Industry to Manipulate Public Opinion on GMOs, Genetically Modified Organisms. Quote, "What happens when a private company with a long history of producing some of the most toxic chemicals on the planet and now produces our food starts facing public pressure from a growing national grassroots movement to label their products to conform with basic principles of democracy and transparency? Well, if that company in question is Monsanto, then you take a page out of Big Tobacco's playbook and hatch a secret plan to enlist the public university scientist to bury the potential harm of your genetically engineered crops by whitewashing negative studies and systematically demonizing your opponents in the media to mislead elected officials and the American public about the safety of GMOs. Here's a little history lesson. In the 1940s, tobacco companies ran ads with doctors proclaiming smoking cigarettes was perfectly safe. In 1946, the R.J. Reynolds Tobacco Company ran a now infamous campaign called More Doctors Recommend Camels. After surveying more than 113,597 doctors, quote, from every branch of medicine, in reality, the tobacco company's advertising agency employees questioned doctors at medical conferences and their offices and used these fake results to deceive the generation of smokers. Today, Monsanto and the biotech industry are copying the same tactics, this time hiding behind the facade of public university scientists and hiring major PR firms to promote GMOs and the toxic weed killer glyphosate, the main chemical ingredient Roundup, which some scientists are offering to drink on Twitter in front of classrooms of students to prove its safety and hide the fact that it is harmful to humans and the environment. Last week, the New York Times released a stunning expose of how Monsanto and the biotech industry enlisted allegedly independent public university scientists in a deceptive campaign to lobby state legislators in Pennsylvania, interfere with ballot initiatives in Oregon and Colorado, and paper over risks of high pesticide usage on the Hawaiian island of Kauai. According to the New York Times, investigative reporter Eric Lipton, as the GMO labeling debate was coming to a boil in America in the past 3 years, Monsanto and, quote, their industry partners retooled their lobbying and public relations strategy to spotlight a rarefied group of advocates, academics brought in for the gloss of impartiality and weight of authority that come with a professor's pedigree, end quote. And why would Monsanto want to do this? Because independent scientists from public university come with a major halo effect, something that Monsanto's top lobbyists mentioned repeatedly in the recently released emails to public university scientists. Lipton's story details how University of Illinois professor and longtime GMO promoter Bruce Chasey used his Monsanto connections to lobby the Environmental Protection Agency to abandon its efforts to tighten regulations on insecticidal GMO seeds. If you take a dive into the emails, you can see how Chasey enlisted to help a former advisor to George Bush and Hillary Clinton, Nina Fedorov, in his efforts to influence the EPA's policies. In the emails, Chasey's efforts to lobby the EPA for looser regulations were encouraged by a Monsanto lobbyist, even as Chasey was negotiating the release of his grant from the company. For background on how this current story originally broke, you have to go back to August 6, when the international science journal Nature reported that more than 4,600 pages of emails from University of Florida plant scientist Kevin Folta, quote, reveal his close ties to the agricultural giant Monsanto and other biotechnology industry interests, end quote. The Nature article set off a minor firestorm on social media when University of Florida professor and Monsanto promoter Kevin Folta's emails were leaked to Nature's Keith Clore for damage control. And then it goes on to talk about how they do this. Well, here's what we know. We know that there's a major campaign underway right now with trolls everywhere getting onto different Facebook pages and then attacking anyone and everyone who says anything critical about GMOs. They seem to have free rein on Wikipedia. And by the way, I'm doing a major, major expose on Wikipedia. It'll be ready for broadcasting very shortly that exposes why I would not use it. And what's behind it. In any case, it's not what you think either. So they're attacking all the scientists, all the journalists, anyone who says anything bad about GMOs, they're on them. The trouble is there are more and more people learning the truth about GMOs, and no longer do they have the complete control of Congress, the states, or the media when it comes to the dangers of GMOs. The truth is getting out. And we're doing more and more with our Seeds of Death documentary and articles on GMOs to get it out. So we're in a major battle now, and the future of food and its safety is at stake. More on that on an upcoming program. And to finish off our program today, we have Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Hi, everyone. I wanted to just make one more quick announcement about our health support. It's going to take place this Sunday, and we've had so many calls, Gary, from people from the audience asking us if we could please integrate menopause as part of this health support group. So you went ahead and said, yes, let's do it. So if you have menopause and you want to join our health support group, you need to make, this is a 12-week commitment for the menopause protocol. So if you're interested in doing that, it's going to take place in Manhattan. Please give me a call. I'm at 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198. Also, I'm still screening people who have type 2 diabetes. So give a call.
For menopause, you must have at this time any number, any of the 57 different common symptoms of menopause, including hot flashes, night sweats, thinning of the eyebrows and the hair, weight gain without extra calories, mood swings, incontinence, insomnia, depression. These are some, but just a minor part of all the symptoms that a person can go through with menopause. You must be having at least 4 menopausal symptoms to get into the study. All right, that's it for today. Look forward to sharing more on tomorrow's program. And tonight, 7 o'clock on the Progressive Commentary Hour, Pacifica and all of its problems and solutions, we'll be sharing. Have a nice day.